they always tell you like niche down. And I was like, I don't know what to do. But it is important to niche down, but also then to grow bigger, especially when it comes to personal branding, you need to become the niche. Otherwise, you're not going to grow as fast as you want. Consistently putting the reps on how much you know a topic. And then the thing that you can leverage the most is your story, because no one else has that. In this like era of ChatGPT AI, no one can compete against your story. People are so used to this corporate speak that everybody hates, but no one says anything about it.
Do you want to know how to grow to 100,000 followers on social media? Listen up. Lara Costa has done exactly that. She went from zero to 125,000 followers in less than 2 years. What do some of the biggest creators in the world, like Stephen Bartlett, Kylie Jenner, and MrBeast, all have in common? It's a clear personal brand. Lara specializes in creating a clear personal brand that helps you scale your audience, your revenue, and your business through content. This podcast is a step-by-step guide to go from zero to 100,000 followers. We break down the psychology of content, why people fail, biggest shifts you need to overcome in your mindset, building an audience, and how to become AI-proof. If you've been struggling with your content, this podcast is for you. What's up, people? Before we get into this video, please make sure to subscribe, like, and comment down below so we can get bigger, better guests for you every single week. Let's get straight into the video right now.
All right, let's kick off. So where I want to start, Lara, is a quote from yourself on the top of your page. Stop trying to find a niche, become the niche instead.
Yes.
Where did that come from?
Danko.
Really?
I was so inspired by his journey where he was like, you are the niche, or like becoming the niche of one. And his whole philosophy behind it of just branding yourself as the thing rather than trying to find your thing really helped me stand out from the crowd at an early stage.
How are you influenced by him? Like, as was he one of your people you were kind of following in the beginning?
Not at the beginning, but I did find his philosophical marketing style very intriguing. Mm-hmm. And that single quote, become a niche in the niche of one, truly resonated with me because I have a massive tool stack and skill stack, actually, where I'm just not just good at one thing. I like doing a variety of things. And when it came to picking a niche with the agency or even like myself, like they always tell you like niche down. And I was like, I don't know what to do. But it is important to niche down, but also then to grow bigger, especially when it comes to personal branding, you need to become the niche. Otherwise, you're not going to grow as fast as you want.
It's also the values, right? Because for you, like you're an excellent writer, you're great at creating content, you're probably great at running a business too, but that stuff is nearly at a commodity level. There's a great book called Category of One, which is like how you become like that one individual. So let's say you're a great writer, or for me, I'm a podcaster. At the same time, the other stuff that you do around the surface is what actually draws people in. So my background's in bodybuilding, I like traveling, I don't want to just stay in the same location all the time. There's small little kind of cues, right? Which you have that as well, right? You have all the different attributes to yourself, which makes you distinguishable. Now, my question off that is, why do you think people don't lean into those extra variables that could actually help them in their pursuit?
Because people are scared of being themselves on social media. There is this massive, again, idea that you just have to be known for one thing, and you do. And the moment people start building their personal brands and start figuring out what their stories are, mm-hmm. they push back because they don't want to be seen as vulnerable or share too much of themselves out there. And also they think that people don't care about their stories enough. They just care about the thing that they're doing. But in reality, the more personable you are, the bigger you're going to get because people relate to you the most. People want to learn from people they like. So it's super important to do that.
How do you tell those stories?
Well, it depends. I do it through storytelling on LinkedIn, and it depends on the story. If it's like I have a specific storytelling method where I start with a platitude. I then lead with actionable advice and then with a lesson. And I do this because in an era of social media where everybody seems so vain, you have to be somewhat relatable and give something back to the audience so they stick to what you're talking about and they feel interested in what you're saying.
Give me an example.
So most of my stories on LinkedIn aren't about me. They're about the reader. So when I'm talking about something I achieved, I make it about them. So if I say, oh, success looks different for everyone. To me, it looks like taking my dad to Dubai. on a trip. And I did this all because of personal branding, and you can do it too. Here's how. And then I tell them exactly how they can build their personal brand. So I share a win, then I share a lesson, and then a story, and then like actionable advice on how they can do the same. So then that way I create a story that's not literally nothing to do with me, but it's about the reader. But yeah, that's how I kind of like build my brand of base storytelling.
It makes sense though, because like you've learned from people like Dan Coe, Dakota, and they've all got to that stage because they share that story and journey, right? But I think there's like a blockage in people's brains because they're coming from their job, or they don't want to be seen as someone. Being seen as like vulnerable is often seen as, oh, like I'm showcasing my failures. Whereas like people should be able to kind of spin that in a different light, right? Because it's the genesis of like what I'm doing here today is like I was working in finance. It was shit. I hated it. Even the early days of my podcast were really bad. And then we kind of worked on it and fixed on it. But I think there's a fine line between like being like authentic and genuinely authentic and kind of saying it to please the algos, right? And we see this a lot on Instagram, right? Not Instagram, LinkedIn. It can be kind of virtue signaling or just kind of petty sometimes. So how do you cross that line and make it actually real?
Yeah, I feel like we live in this sort of authenticity paradox where the more authentic people try to become, the less they actually are. People keep on telling everybody, be authentic, be authentic. It's part of like being authentic is not part of a marketing strategy. You're just authentic or you're not. Mm. And the more authentic you try to be, the less you are because you're trying to force it out. Like if you sit down and write, oh, I'm going to be authentic today. Well, what the fuck are you going to say? Nothing. Authenticity comes from vulnerability and your actual lessons that you want to share with your audience. And hence, when you see people that are successful, like Dakota, Dan Coe, Justin Welsh, they're being authentic because they're just like that. Like if you met them, they will tell you the same stories that they're writing about just because it's an anecdote from them. It's like sitting down at a coffee shop and talking to a friend because they're just being honest. Mm. So, and then it comes like with all the virtue signaling that I try to kind of like eradicate of storytelling. And that's to stop doing that, you actually give back to your audience and you're like, this is happening to me and this is my transformation, but you can also do it too. And then here's how. So it's about both sides to the coin where you're like trying to be authentic and then trying to be helpful and then walking the fine line between bragging and just being honest.
Justin's a really good example because he's not like, you know, spitting shit on the feed. Like he's just like telling like genuine, relatable stories, but it's not too much. You get me? Like he's quite like introverted to some degree, right? He's like, he's just kind of chill. And when I have met him, he's the exact same individual that it is online. Now that's obviously been a big proponent of how he's grown, how you've grown to what is like 113,000 followers at this point.
Yeah.
How do you like think about that in your brain? Like in terms of what were some of those like main triggers that let you grow that much?
So with LinkedIn, it was actually interesting. I actually studied Justin Welsh a lot alongside all the big creators at the start. My whole strategy at the start was noting down who the best creators in every industry on LinkedIn were. And then I reverse engineered every single one of their posts to like they started. I spent hours like researching, okay, this triggered that and like this got them from 100 likes to 1,000 likes, like and etc. So I noticed a pattern, and the pattern was education and storytelling. The best creators have a mix of both. Some of them just do one and some of them do another one, but the ones that grow the quickest do education very well and storytelling. So Justin, Danko, Dakota, etc., they have a mix of very high value content plus story. So what made them grow so much is because they have and I have it as well, we have the skill there. Like people can trust us because they can see us like explaining simple things that are actually very hard to complicate, to grasp. And then the stories that back us up and make us relatable. So then I was like, okay, I have the stories and I have the education. Now I'm going to apply this both and just keep it going.
You've built a community though. That's the challenge. I do find that in this like TikTok, like algo world, that people will get attention. And I think there's like attention and there's retention. And like anyone can get attention, right? You just flash your abs on Instagram, you get attention. But then that doesn't retain users. And that's why you've coaches that can't get any clients, right? Because it's not like valuable. How have you been able to walk through that process? Because it seems like to me that you're able to build the audience, get really good engagement, but then be able to bring these people into your community. And now they really fuck with you, right? And it's, again, it's with all the big creators, but there is like that challenge for people to do that.
I was thinking about this question the other day and I realized that if you put gym people and creators on a Venn diagram, the thing in the middle is community, like people that love going to the gym and good creators that grow communities very well. We all have a massive community. Like you're going to the gym because of the big community. That's how I got into powerlifting. And then it translated because the humor and the need to be kind of like with a group of people that are like-minded really transferred into my marketing skills. So I was able to do that just because that's all I know from my years of going to the gym, which is so funny. And it's also in the Venn diagram, you can also include dark humor, which then translates to community and whatever I built.
But that's interesting because like the fitness space is so big that whether it's like powerlifting, bodybuilding, CrossFit, they have that cult. Right. And if you ever had 48 Laws of Power, it's like one of the main ways to like basically build influence is true cult building. Have a narrative, have like a signal, build people, convince people of that, and continuously hit that message over and over again.
Yeah.
Which is pretty wild, right? Think of it. I want to ask you about your own like identity and how you kind of shift, right? Because my mate Jack Hopkins said to me before, he was like, he feels that he changes every 3 months, he's a new person. And when I observe your journey just 3 months ago, 3 months before that, even we were talking beforehand about your business and stuff, you're able to take this with so much stride. How much kind of internal work are you doing to change continuously?
So much. I've grown like 5 years in the last year just because of business.
I look about 10 years older myself.
It's been a massive transformational journey, and that's why I love personal branding. Mm-hmm. It's not about what you do online when it comes to your personal brand. It's also who you become offline. So when you're working and growing your personal brand, the transformation you have within is actually insane. Like if I look back at myself a year ago, I'll be like, who is that? And that if the person that was a year ago looks up, I mean, they'll be like, no way, she did that. And it was all because I just literally honed in on building myself. And then through that, you have to deal with your trauma. You have to deal with like limiting beliefs. You have to deal with shitty clients. You have to deal with friendships. You have to deal with like your own emotions all at once. Yeah. While you're trying to build a business and also be a normal person and have 100%. Hobbies and other things. So all of that just puts you in like a massive spiral of like growth. So honestly, and this is actually funny. My cousin, she asked me some stuff about mental health. She was struggling like everybody. And just like, how did you do it? And I was trying to find the answer. Like, how did I heal my mental health? How did I stop being sad all the time? And this is not actual advice, was like, build a fucking business.
100%.
There's nothing else than finding your purpose and building a business and just getting on with it.
It's finding that purpose. And I always say that like entrepreneurship is a journey of self-discovery, disguising the path for profitability. And you're always just searching for that purpose and meaning, right? And instead of waking up and scrolling through Instagram blindly, you're waking up and building something that you believe is true to be correct and is true to your own values. And if you can follow that line closely, that the months roll over, the quarters roll over, the years roll over, and you're getting better continuously. And if I look back at even last year, I looked like a baby. My hair was like fucking 6 inches shorter, right? But even like my face, like, and not saying that I look like older now, but I just didn't have the scars, basically, of like the entrepreneurship world. Yeah. And I think what's interesting is like a wound is when something happens to you, a scar is the lesson. And that's like what I think is most beautiful about like building, because doesn't matter what it is, when you're in that arena, it's a cure. Like it genuinely is a cure for other stuff. Now you need to manage your health and manage your relationships and manage your wealth around that effectively. But that's why when I'm observing someone like you, it's amazing to see that transition.
I love how you call that an arena, because I love the game analogy of just building a business. Every single day, I feel like I'm playing a game in
Infinite
this world.
Game.
It's just like we were talking last night. I couldn't sleep because I was so excited, and I can't wait to wake up. I wait to wake up because I'm so excited. Like I wake up and I'm like, I can't wait to start the day. And when my friends ask me like, what are you doing? I'm like, working. They're like, you're excited? And I'm like, yes, I can't wait to do it. What are you doing over the weekend? Working. And it's just a game. And like I wake up, play the game, use my cards, use whatever ace card I have, or use any level of games. Like I'm playing Mario Kart every day. Like that's literally my job, and it's insane. And I don't think I would have realized how powerful that was if I didn't like join LinkedIn or like start building my personal brand and join entrepreneurship and play in the arena.
And you also have to go through that yourself, right? Because like it seems like, you know, try to say, oh yeah, just go pick something you enjoy and build it. But I've done so many dumb shit when I was younger in terms of building like the wrong businesses that it only took me building my podcast, which was again, not monetized for so many years, to realize that that's what I wanted to do, because I'd spent so many years working on something that wasn't make any money, but I really enjoyed it, right? Same with your writing. I imagine the internal challenges that comes from writing and improving your writing one post at a time, it's kind of what you chase, and the business just kind of happens.
Yeah.
The money just, I know for most part, it would just kind of like happen as a result. Now you mentioned about like limiting beliefs, mindset, and so on and so forth. What have you had to, I guess, let go of in the pursuit of what you're doing now?
Self-doubt. The idea that I can't do something, I can't. Like, what, anything is possible, especially in the internet. Like, the internet literally leveled up the playing field for everyone. And whenever, even now, I call myself out a lot. I'm like, I can't do it. And I'm like, I can't do it. Or like, oh, you're dumb. You're smart. Like, consistently reaffirming that I can do something rather than I can't has been so helpful for me. Because at school, when I was on my phone, I was always on my phone. I was like the girl that was always on social media. I was like enthralled by Vine and Instagram, like influencer marketing. I was so obsessed with it.
And you were the purchaser.
I was the consumer. Like I've been consuming content for so long. Like I am, if you ask me about anything on Vine, like I'll tell you. I knew all of them. But I remember my teachers were like, if you stay on your phone, you'll never do this. You'll never be able to do this. You can't take economics because you're not smart enough. You can't actually try and do politics at uni because that's just not for you. Try something else. Try something easier. And then trying to just fix that mindset that you can't do something because someone else told me to has been very challenging. But I think I'm at the end of it where I'm like, I can do anything I want.
Mm. What current like limitations are you kind of battling with? Business oriented or content oriented?
Content oriented, no. More like understanding how far you can take things. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you have this a lot where you're like, can I really do that? Like, can I scale to this? Can I make this amount of money? Can I get this many followers? Or can I create this much impact? I remember when I started my newsletter, for example, I was like, no one's going to sign up. And then I was about to not do it. And then one of our friends, Dakota, he actually was like, no, do this, this and that. And I just went and did it. And I was like, very nervous. I didn't want to launch it. And I launched it. And it got 5,000 subscribers in the first 42 hours.
What the fuck?
And I wasn't going to do it because my limited belief was telling me I couldn't do it. Because I was like, you're a one trick pony. I was like, you can't do it again. No one believes in you. I was really scared. Even though I have a track record of building brands, I was still scared. No matter how much proof I had, there's always that like small twinkle of like, you can't do it. Like that little inner voice.
And that could go back to, like, to the platform, because people say like, oh, like LinkedIn is for like virtue signaling, right? It's not like a credible platform, but like you have taken that to build a newsletter subscribers. You've taken that into YouTube and smashed YouTube now the past couple of weeks. You've taken this into Twitter, which is like the fucking cesspit pit for all this shit, right? And you've been able to transfer over your skill into other platforms. And like they are different skills, different domains, but people's perspectives and restrictions on how the world should work or how you should operate within the world makes people restrict themselves from trying those things.
Yep.
Do you get me?
Totally.
And I'll give you an example. Kickoff session started for me on LinkedIn, and it was a career podcast for young professionals. And then like a year or two into it, we moved to Instagram, and Instagram was really helpful. We moved to YouTube, was, you know, our biggest platform now. But it was like those small internal dialogues that you're hearing, but it's all noise. If you've ever read The Four Agreements, talk about like basically, you know, making that agreement with yourself, not making assumptions, not taking things personally, and just trying your best. When I'm looking at that and I'm thinking, is this true? Or like, what is truth? And then if it's true, why is that true that way in making an assumption versus you just starting the newsletter and being able to smash it? So it's interesting, right? Because How many more people are in your scenario right now?
So many. There's so many people. In this quote, I love this quote. There's someone out there doing the thing you want to do that you're not doing just because they started taking action. And that's that single thing is the reason why I started my own business. I saw someone that had less experience than me doing something that I wanted to do, but I wasn't doing. And they were smashing it. But I knew I had more experience than them. So I just looked at them and I was like, why? And instead of getting jealous, I actually was like, I got inspired. And I was like, if they can do it, I can do it too. That's how I started my LinkedIn. That's how I started my business. That's how I started my Twitter. And that's how I started my YouTube. Out of like mere challenge by challenging my own limiting beliefs and seeing someone else not having those limiting beliefs. It's so like just taking inspiration from someone else and just being like, instead of being jealous, because a lot of people are like, oh, why are they doing that? Like, it's so easy for them. Like LinkedIn's so easy. You can grow on LinkedIn so easily. Like you can talk about LinkedIn on LinkedIn and grow so quickly. You can talk about Twitter on Twitter and grow so quickly. You can talk about marketing and grow so quickly. There's always something like that. And instead of taking that and being like, okay, I'm going to do it as well. Like I want a piece of that. That is the best mindset shift that you could apply in order to grow and do whatever the fuck you want.
You have a particular skill though to show up on these different platforms and do really well. Probably boil it down to the psychology behind it. How do you think about the psychology of writing and incorporating that into your work?
Yeah, I've never read a copywriting book in my entire life. Let's just start there. So then I was able to, one, understand content creation. I'm not a copywriter by any means. I'm just a really good content marketer. And I was able to understand how to write good content in every single platform. So what works? A hook, a rehook, the body, the call to action. And then understanding how to attract the most attention. The only book that I've ever read that's really transformed my writing is Influence by Robert Cialdini.
Have it on my bookshelf.
Changed my life, that book. And it made me understand one thing is like the art of social proof and reciprocity bias. That those two things, psychological things, have helped me apply it onto my writing, where when you tell someone like, oh, this amount of people are doing this, here's why you should do it too, it creates this like massive movements because people want to do what someone else is doing. So then when it came to writing on social media, I identify that quickly, just naturally by instinct, because I've been consuming content for so long, I just know what works. And then I just apply it on every single social media. Like when it was Instagram, TikTok, LinkedIn, whatever, I just understood it, rasped it, it, and then went from there.
When people are looking at your content and they're seeing the social proof of two things, maybe the work that you've done for other people and also the fact that they also are engaging with your content, like it's kind of like a snowball effect, right? As you're racking up the thousands of likes of your content and you're writing, I guess that pushes you even forward more because people through survivorship bias can see that, okay, this is someone who's successful, to get me? They want to be someone that's associated with someone like you.
So how do you think I did it when I didn't have any success on LinkedIn?
That's interesting. Let's go back to that. So going from zero to 10K, how did you get up there without having the social proof and the social proof?
I think the best way to do that is through a shit ton of education, like consistently putting the reps on how much you know a topic. Okay. And then the thing that you can leverage the most is your story, because no one else has that. In this like era of ChatGPT and AI, no one can compete against your story.
Tim Stoddard always says that.
Really?
Says that never be the advice giver. Only share your experiences, because no one can fuck with your experiences. Like, bear in mind, he was like addicted to like Metadrone. And he's like, this is what I've learned. This is where I'm at now. This is what I do. And you can't argue with that. It's just a reality. So that now, as a result, he's actually a thought leader in the space because he's gone through it. He's a G.
Shout out to him. But yeah, I agree. Like there's a lot of how-tos, but there's only one how I. So I've always led my content. I've never called myself an expert. I never called myself an elite like marketer. I'm just Lara, like sharing my story. Like, I don't know. Yeah. I'm just existing. But the way I just grew is from educating people on what I knew and educating people on what I was learning, which then created a snowball effect for my learning, because the more I explained things that I was learning, the more I understood them perfectly, the more I grew. It was like the Feynman technique, where like you learn how to explain things in a simple way, and then it just makes you look better, because the more you simplify something, the higher regarded you are by society.
100%.
So it just created this whole, and again, back to the transformational part of like personal branding, it just created this whole massive like spiral of me growing and growing and growing, because I was learning, applying, learning, applying, learning, applying, instead of what we're used to at school, where it's like learn, 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 learn. I was like doing consistently.
That's the best way. Fall forward, right?
Yeah.
So I had, when I was podcasting, I was sharing a lot of insights from podcasting. So I obviously enjoy this and I love recording. But I found that when I started my kind of like consulting kind of gig, that I liked sharing the experience of it, because it crystallized in my mind what I was learning, what I was doing. Ask better questions, ask shorter questions, speak clearly. And by doing that, I became way better at this. But even when I was building the agency, I was like, is this going to pull away from my podcast? And it did the opposite. I got way better at it, way better at understanding like how algorithms work, how platforms work, how design work, how editing work, because I was teaching other people either through text or through with clients. Mm-hmm. And I used to think that would actually be a detractor, but actually wasn't.
Mm.
So anything else within that 0 to 10K, let's create a roadmap. So first 10K, and bear in mind, I don't even have 10K on LinkedIn, but it's actually a question for you.
I've offered to help you.
You have. By actually, the way. Question for you on this is that, so I have like 6,500 followers.
Facts.
We get good leads. We have a pretty decent business. And it's not like it hasn't hindered me, right? Is there an argument of staying small and keeping that kind of small knit community and then building a business around that? Kind of like what JK Molina pushes.
It depends on what your purpose is. Like if you want to reach the most amount of people, obviously, and your purpose is to help as many people as possible, then the obvious route is to grow your audience. But if it's working for you, and if you don't want the extra hassle of consistently committed to growing your community and storytelling and doing all of these extra things that you need to grow, then yeah, stay small. But if you want to create massive change, you need to take massive action, and with that comes like massive education, massive storytelling, massive social proof.
Well, that's what we do across YouTube, right? We're at like 60K on YouTube deliberately, because that's the impact play. Mm-hmm. And my goal would be to like impact positively over 10 million people in actual unique users, like 10 million people to build their businesses and to build that kind of brand. I just thought that was quite interesting, because LinkedIn for us has always been
leads
in business, although it's been sharing the story and journey too, but it's just like, it's been a very high quality individual. And I think the stats have changed now, but before it was like 1% of people on LinkedIn consume and 99% watch. And also the average income was like 80K.
Mm-hmm.
So it's probably in around that kind of still value. So it made sense, right? So that's the path from 0 to 10K. Do you think it changes from 10K to 100K?
All right, people, we're just going to take one short little break for a little update about Podcast University. So if you enjoy podcasts like this and you want to start your own podcast, head down to the links down below to Podcast University. This is a learning platform that I've built to help people like you build, launch, and scale your own podcast. I wasted many years doing this, making it all up as I go. So I put everything together in a very seamless and easy to follow course for you guys to follow and just learn exactly how to do it. So if you want to bypass a lot of the mess with your podcast, check out the links down below to Podcast University, and I will show you exactly how to launch and scale your own podcast.
Massively. Because then from 0 to 10K, what I forgot to say is that you need to be commenting like a maniac.
How do you comment and not look like a doofus?
You actually just have a conversation on LinkedIn. It's so easy to stand out because people are so used to this corporate speak that everybody hates, but no one says anything about it. And when you actually... I remember the first time I cracked a joke, I was like, your hat looks funny. Got like 50 likes. Like everybody's, oh my God, she's so funny. I was like, I literally just made a joke.
Yeah.
So according to people, I'm actually really funny on LinkedIn. I don't know what people outside of LinkedIn think, but I am very funny.
You're the comedian.
I am the class clown of LinkedIn. So just be yourself. Honestly, the best way to comment on LinkedIn is to either leave a lot of value where you add something to the post that's not like, oh, great post, 100%. It's like, oh, I actually really like this and I actually relate because I teach this to my students at school. Or if you see a story, you're like about depression, you share your depression story and like, or something that you relate, and people will see that and they will engage with you back. Like you on LinkedIn, you can only post once, but you can comment like 20 times a day. So you're seen, you post one, you're seen 20 times. Mm. You're leveraging visibility by commenting more rather than just sticking to the post a day. Because that's not going to get you very far.
How much time do you spend on LinkedIn a day?
So it depends on the day. It is my job, first and foremost.
Well, obviously, yeah.
And I've also committed to grow. So at the start of LinkedIn, I was spending upwards to 8 hours a day on the platform.
Engaging with people.
Engaging, learning the platform, studying creators, commenting back and forth, networking, having coffee chats. Like I did it all. Like
that's awesome. I actually love to hear that.
I was obsessed with trying to grow.
Well, it just makes a lot of sense, right? Because like that seems like how you master something, right? Like true mastery takes like extreme amounts of time, but you can actually reduce the days by putting in the hours per day. Does that make sense? So for me, I've been recording for 4 years, but only in the past 2 years, I've been doing 13 hours a day, mm-hmm. every single day. And mm-hmm. I've been, you know, putting really decades ahead of what I would be in the past. What's your take on like engagement bots?
I hate them.
Why?
Okay, I don't hate them, but I feel like it's a very unorganic way to grow if you're starting from zero. The only reason why someone should join an engagement pod if there's like leverage, there's two types of pods. The ones that are filled with people that have nothing to do with you, and then a pod that's filled with high leverage people that will help you grow faster. So an example of this is like, there's a lot of pods that have like 200 people in them, and you just drop your post and then you start like, are you part of a pod?
No. the reason I'm saying it is because like I've seen some of those like high level creators, and then you can see how they like interact, right? It's like,
it's all fake, and you can see and you can tell.
It's pretty obvious.
It's bad. And then the moment you take the pod out, you go from 100 reactions to 20 likes. So you've actually essentially wasted your time and money on fake engagement. It's like, I wouldn't even call it steroids because you still need to work with steroids, but it's just inflated growth that will disappear. And then—
reminds you of ads.
Yes. And then you have the high leverage pods, which I'm still not a fan of because it's still like, so you're playing a game, like it depends. Like, you can play the game however you want on LinkedIn. And if you have the leverage and the connections and you're able to join a pod with people with 100K all across the board, then 100% is like good networking.
Yeah.
Because then you're actually leveraging each other's growth and then you kind of grow faster. And it's like, it's this really cool snowball effect. But only then I would recommend. But if you don't have influence, if you don't have expertise, and if you don't have like the reputation, don't join the pod. You need to grow your network organically first.
100%. I've seen this a lot in the podcast world. They run ads, right? And it's hilarious. People will run ads that are YouTube videos. They get 100,000 views, no comments, no likes. Because when you run an ad, you don't get, someone doesn't watch the video. They just see the fucking thing or they click on and they click off it immediately. So it's all fake. So it's a smoke screen. It's all it's all up in air. If you're familiar with Lempire, you know, Gwilain, I forget his surname. He had a tool called Lempod. And I met Gwilain last week and he said it was the biggest mistake he ever made because he built a tool for people to have as a Chrome extension to join these pods. And then when you released a LinkedIn post, the post went there and then you automatically like had the page open or some shit. And he was like, he built it to 40K a month and he sold it. He was like, I just want it off my hands. He's like, this is just not how.
Did you really say that?
Yeah, he's documented our story that it worked sideways, is that he thought it was going to be something like the high level entrepreneurs that maybe there's like four or five of you helping each other. But instead it was the opposite. It was a bunch of people with zero followers all joining these pods. And then he just sold it. He was like,
that's
fuck
so
this. He was like, I didn't know that. That's the reason why I asked, because I observe other people that you can see are in some sort of fucking WhatsApp group. And the reality then, I wonder, is this like beneficial towards their business?
It's not. And I accidentally joined a pod at the start of my LinkedIn journey. It was called Social Saturdays. And it Social Saturdays. And it felt really cool. And it actually helped me a lot just to break down the stigma behind LinkedIn and how it was all professional. Mm-hmm. And then I realized it was a pod and it was all fake engagement. And I kind of like dropped off. And then obviously my engagement dropped. Yeah. And then I just had to put in the reps with my work.
I want to ask you maybe about like how you're changing even like your setup now going forward and what that's been. So you, from Mexico, you moved to the UK. Been a lot of transitions there, right? But you've been in the UK since you were 15, and now you're still working towards like your new business right now.
Stalk me.
I always am. I'm very ear to the ground. How do you think living in the UK has helped you at an individual level, especially the stuff you've kind of overcame?
Bro, the UK changed my life. Mm. A lot of people want to leave the UK and all I want to do is stay. The country is the UK. Like the city of London just is so inspiring to me. The moment I arrived into the UK when I was 15, it was like goodbye to my old life and welcome to this like brand new life where I got to pick my character, pick the trait that she had, understand my own fair advantages and literally go crazy from there. Like the girl that I was in Mexico versus the girl that I turned into at 16, completely different. Because I let go of all this like limiting beliefs that my city, like my small town that I grew up in, had me in like this box of like, you're just a Mexican girl who's meant to do this and live a life like this and make this much money and study this. The moment I moved away, everything changed. So it's the biggest thing that's happened to me in my entire life, moving away from home.
I think it's cool how you did it so young because, you know, I observe some guys and they're like 28, 29, but they're still kids. You know, they're living at home or they're living in their hometown and they don't really actually like grow up. So you can grow up at 15, 16. Like my partner moved to Belize, like 15, 16. She was working in wildlife conservation. And if you met her, like, she's so wise. One of my friends, Ned, he's like 56. He said like, she's 22 or something. I don't even know what age she is. But he's saying that, you know, you can basically develop so quickly when you're out on your own mm-hmm. that you can act like 30, 40, like the way you like carry yourself and everything. You're so like mature because you've put in those reps. Do you get me? I think that's just an interesting observation because a lot of guys and women will just fucking slide through life and not really take that autonomy. But I guess you had no other choice.
I had no other choice. I didn't have my parents look after me. I don't have any brothers and sisters. I only had myself to look after myself. And I was like, okay, it's just me against the world. And that's it. I was struggling with a lot of like mental health issues and stuff. And then I realized like no one was going to come to save me. It was like, I could only do it myself either way. So no one's going to, I kept on trying to be the victim. I tried to, you know, oh, feel bad for me type of like life. And then I realized no one cares about my sob story.
How did you work through that?
A lot of inner reflection when I was 15, a lot of journaling. I discovered YouTube like from a very early age and I actually typed in at a point in life, like how to change, how to become better, how to become more charismatic. And from there, I just started taking traits from like, I don't know, 30-year-old people.
Tony Robbins,
Alan Watts, Nikola Tesla, like all of these people that really inspired me. I just kind of learned from their lessons and I was like, how can I apply their lessons to me now? I was 15, like 20. And then that's how I changed, just understanding that there is more to life than my limiting beliefs and what my brain is telling me that I can do. And then the more I got over, the more inspiring I became to other people. So the more I told stories, the more people liked me, mm-hmm. the more like growth I was able to do because I was inspired to grow even more.
So interesting to see you say like that you really enjoy the UK because for me that makes me realize that like it's all about people's perception, right? And like how you view the world, right?
The grass is greener on the other side.
Where the grass is greener where you water it.
Oh.
Right? So you're in the UK, you've worked through a lot of these kind of mental models yourself, and now you enjoy just being there. Whereas for a lot of people, they would look down at the UK because they're like, oh, fuck this. It doesn't have like the sun like Dubai and doesn't have this, right? But it's kind of like your own internal dialogue and like all the answers are inside you, right? I don't necessarily need to be running around to all these cities anymore, even though I spend a lot of my time traveling. But because I know like where home is, does that make sense? Like mentally?
Yes.
And
I'm
like, and you don't necessarily need to be searching for stuff. And that was the big thing for me was like quitting alcohol, quitting the partying and so on, because I feel like when you go down that path of degeneracy, you're just trying to find something. You get me? You're trying to fill some sort of void. Whereas a lot of time when the work is done internally, which for me has been a lot older than when you started doing it, you realize that all those other stuff, it doesn't really matter. Now, London's beautiful and you enjoy being there, but I imagine that you'd have a great time where in Exeter where you went to university, right?
I'm having the best time everywhere I go. I'm like, I'm living life. I'm here. I'm happy. In Exeter, I was the happiest. It was like, I was living like a fucking small square box room and I was the happiest because I was just clicking away, posting memes, like writing content. I was like, oh my God, magic internet money. So you're right. Now I feel like if I went back to Mexico, I wouldn't hate it as much as I used to. I like you say, home is where you're happy and I'm happy inside. That's all that matters.
Right.
Yeah.
Internal work. What type of kind of, I guess, like mental models or like how should people who are struggling like approach these scenarios, right?
Very interesting question. I approach what sadness?
Overcoming that, like, you know, you're faced with a shit scenario, you're broke, you're lazy, you're unhappy, you're unfit. How do you ever run your life?
Focus, there's two things, like what you can't control and what you can control. So if you don't like yourself, change. Like there's nothing preventing you to change besides your own head. Obviously your environment, if you can't move away, you can move away in your head. When I didn't like my friendship group, for example, and I couldn't change because I wasn't meeting any new people, I got obsessed with podcasts and I made friends with, I don't know, all these podcasters like Jay Shetty, like Stephen Bartlett. Like, they're my best friends in my head. We're best friends. And I just became having like, started having conversations with them. And then in my head, I was changing. And the more I changed my mindset and my personality, I created my personal reality from that, like Joe Dispenza would say.
All right, guys, one short little update for VOEX. I want to give a short little overview about my own company, my media company called VOEX. So if you are a company or you are an enterprise looking to grow your brand and looking to grow your podcast, feel free to reach out to work with us at VOEX. What we do is a fully fledged end-to-end management of your podcast. We take care of the strategy, the consulting. We take care of the growth, the management. We take care of all the editing, all the boring stuff so you can focus on creating good podcasts and create and growing your brand. If you want to grow your podcast and get to new users, if you want to grow your business, generate more revenue and all that good stuff, check out the links down below to VOEX. You can follow through to schedule a call with our team or else you can fill out the application form to see if you qualify to work with us. Thank you.
Have you ever read Turning Pro by Stephen Pressfield?
No.
I'll get you that book.
Okay.
Give me your address. I'll send you the book. I'll send you a few books.
Okay. Send me books.
Stephen Pressfield is a famous writer and he was naturally talented, right? But he went through like a life of being kind of miserable and a bit degenerate and he was living in a halfway house, right? And he was in such a bad position that he never realized how bad it was. When you're at that bottom or near the bottom, you don't realize the other side of life. So he was happy out. Broke, he was picking cherries, he was making like $20 a month, right? It's like in the 80s, 90s. But he knew he was a good writer. And the ability to go from being an amateur, which is leaning into your vices, the stupidity, your addictions, and turning pro, is mainly in the mind. It's a commitment to yourself to get up and do the fucking work. And regardless of the outcome, to stick with that day in, day out. And regardless of the result at the end of the day, the pro mentality is someone who basically sticks to all those strong virtues, right? So for him, it was, he made the money picking cherries and then he would spend 1 month typing, writing out manuscripts. He would submit it to a publisher, they would decline it, go back, pick cherries, get enough money, spend another month doing it. He lived in a cabin for many years doing this. And regardless if someone accepted his new book or not, he still kept on going.
Mm.
And it doesn't have to be like a professional domain like us or like an artist. It can be someone who picks cherries, someone who views that as the craft and they want to get bigger, they want to get better, like build bigger boxes of cherries and so on and so forth. So the actual vehicle is irrelevant. It's a principle.
I love that.
And that comes, for me, it comes from bodybuilding. It was the fact that the results are not going to come today. They're going to come in like 6 months or 12 months. Or to be honest, they may not ever come, right? There's also that aspect too, right? So, like there was times where...
I've been lifting for 5 years. I don't have abs. Like you can't see my biceps and I still do it. Like it's just
similar. That's the whole thing, right? And it was... I trained about a year ago for an entire year to potentially do a pro show. So I was there with my coach. We trained every single day as in... Diet was 100%, everything was accurate. And at the end of it, the very end of it, we looked at physique. I mean, my coach was like, you're probably 2 years away. And I was like, it's the reality because it's not about the outcome, it's about the attitude. So when we did the attitude, we're like, all right, this is where we're currently at. And I think it's a really good baseline because it's like in business, right? you're doing really well, no doubt about that. But there's going to become a point where you probably want to do a bit more or so on. And at that point, it's not like you're going to do something and it's going to happen the next day. It's going to be like you'll make a change and then in 6 months, 12 months, 18 months, you'll get the impact. So there's a really cool guy called Charlie Morgan. He's based in Dubai. He talks about time. He learned it from Sam Ovens. And basically, you put whatever you do today, so everything has like a cause and reaction. And everything that you do today will have an impact, positive or negatively. But what people don't realize is that there's a time delay. So mm-hmm. if you read a book on copywriting, you can't just, you can implement it today, mm-hmm. but it's going to be you practicing for the next 180 days and then executing on all the things you've learned from today. Similarly, if you take methamphetamines, you're going to get no side effects straight away, right? You're going to be fine after a couple of days. But if you kept on doing it over the course of 180 days, you're going to be a drug addict. So the returns are asymmetrical. They can go positively or negatively. And you just got to make sure that you're doing the right things, still living your life, so on and so forth. But it's all I think about is time delay.
I love how you related back to fitness. And I'm noticing this really cool trend about amongst all the very successful entrepreneurs I've met. And they all have one thing in common is like they're very high performance athletes, whether they're like running or like powerlifting or bodybuilding, they're all so into their art. There's like this really cool quote from the Daily Stoic guy, Curry with me, is a love the humble art. And I think is by Marcus Aurelius. And it's like, you do the thing because you love it so much and you repeat it every day, regardless of the outcome. It's the same with fitness. And then you translate it to business, and that's how you grow so quickly, because you're used to repeating the same fucking shit, the same fucking fundamentals every single day without seeing a return. Mm. And you don't care, like you know it's going to work at some point. You, if you get the reps in, you know at some point you're going to see the benefits. It's the same thing. I think I called this year, like 2024, when I was writing on my like goals for this year, I called it the year of the high performance entrepreneur. And that's my year, where I'm literally applying every single lesson from the gym onto business. And first month, the growth has been insane just by applying, like literally translating gym to business. How cool is that?
And it's about not seeking external validation, right? Because when you get into the gym in the beginning, especially for a guy, you think like, oh, chicks are going to love it, right?
It's only the boys.
It's only the boys. Man, if I'm in Ibiza, right? If I'm in Ibiza when I was younger, I'd like feel someone touch me. And it's always like a dude, literally. And it's a guy being like, I really like your like back. And I'm like,
oh, thanks, mate.
I'm like, this is completely wrong, right? But this is the reason why people fall off, right? Because they seek external validation. They're doing it for chicks. And then they realize then that chicks don't actually give a shit, right? That what happens is they give up as a result.
Mm.
So not getting that. Similarly in business, right? Mm-hmm. That people get into it. You know, I interviewed Luke Belmar recently and I said, is entrepreneurship a matrix? Because it sounds like to me that people make money so that they can go flash the Rolex and buy the Lambo. And he was like, yeah, but the priority's wrong, because the goal shouldn't be to show what you've earned. The goal should be to follow the goal and the path, right? To pursue that internal desire and not show it externally. Bring that back to fitness is a person who just flashes their abs and ass on Instagram all the time, because they're seeking external validation. And what's interesting there is as time goes on and the looks fade, that's when they get really fucked up internally. All of their identity is attached to the external view. Similarly in business, you're always going to be chasing it. And I spent a lot of time in America. America is such an interesting place. Have you been there? I was in North Carolina and I was in New York too. North Carolina is quite interesting because it's like suburbs, like suburbia, very wealthy. You go down a neighborhood and every house will be like $2 or $3 million. And I was like, to my girlfriend's parents, I was like, what's the story here? And they're like, majority of these people are not entrepreneurs, they're employees. I was like, that's interesting. But yeah, like VPs of Google, Amazon, they're probably on like $500,000 a year. And I'm like, but the house is $3 million. They're like, yeah, like the mortgage is like $30,000 a month and they can barely afford it. I'm like, so why do they have it? And they're like, just keeping up with Joneses. They have the brand new Range Rover, the brand new Tesla, unbelievable house. The kid is like playing semi-professional tennis. But they can afford it, but they're following a virtue in it that's not aligned to them, it's aligned to someone else. How Dan Cole puts it is, if you don't have a plan, you'll be assigned a plan. And a lot of these people are playing the wrong infinite game. And I think that's what it all goes back to, right? And that's why you and me can just be chill here on like fucking, what day is Tuesday morning?
Yeah, it just all comes down to how we've been raised and how the education system kind of just teaches you to follow lead and never actually think for yourself. I remember my last year at university, they put us in this room, and it was all about writing a CV and nothing about starting your own business. And then people were asking questions about like, oh, how do I do this? And then this, you do that. And then this, you do that. And then if you were to introduce entrepreneurship into the like mix, they were like, no. Like, and then even at school, when you talk about entrepreneurship, they're like, how are you going to do that?
It wasn't even an idea.
No. And so the way school just kind of indoctrinates you to just follow the program, just get with it. Just, you're going to graduate school, you're going to be unemployed for 2 years because you can't find a job. Then you're going to find a job you hate. You're going to work a 9-to-5 that you hate and then just barely pay the bills, be miserable. But that's what you're expected to do. So that's okay because you're expected to be miserable. And then somehow you'll find the love of your life. If you're lucky, get married and then live that simple life. And the moment you realize you're actually in control of your own reality, mm-hmm. it's the moment everything changes. And when you break out of like this matrix, but then you have to be careful to not to fall onto another matrix, which is the entrepreneurship matrix,
exactly.
where you start working endless hours. You don't have any control. You don't sleep. You don't do anything that you like. You're just working endless hours. So don't get out of the matrix to get into another matrix.
100%. Oh, that's such a fucking good point. That's exactly the way I describe this, because like people swap one
and
for another,
for
right? Because you just move group, right? And like we've discussed this before, like, you know, if you're making 50K a month, you meet someone else who's making 100K a month, and like you should be just happy for them versus like, okay, like now I'm inferior until I get to that point, because it's all just fugazi at the end of the day then.
Mm-hmm.
And also it depends on what you want, right? Like I just don't want those things. I don't like need them. So I don't even like need the cash. Does that make sense? It's just more the pursuit, more the enjoyment.
It's a purpose.
Exactly.
It's about the moment you realize your purpose and you find it and what that is, everything just makes sense. If the why is powerful, the how is easy.
Mm.
So the moment you kind of like know, then everything else, whatever how hard it may seem, simple.
How have you never fallen into those traps?
I have many times. Yeah. I fall into them every day. I'm like, I call myself out, because in this era of social media, again, there's always going to be that shiny object. But oh, I should start a community. Oh, I should start a mastermind. Oh, I should start a new product or a new service. And then like, no, wake up. Like, what are you doing? Focus on one thing. And I've spent so much money this year on mentors just to keep me sane. On like what is the one thing that's going to keep moving the needle forward today? That's the only thing I do now. Instead of focusing on social media and content creation and getting to the new thing and stalking this person, and well, what's Alex supposed to be doing? What's Justin Walsh doing? What's Danko doing? What's my other friend in like fucking Spain doing? That I have absolutely no idea what they're doing, but like I want to do it because it looks cool. What am I doing? And what is actually going to help my purpose today, tomorrow, and the week after? That's it. And that's the only way. Otherwise, I lose my shit. I time blocked every single day just to make sure that I don't lose focus. Otherwise, I'm just going to be a complete mess and burn out.
Let's even talk about that, because the focus element is everything, right?
Focus is insane. Like, it's crazy how simple focus sounds, but how hard it is to grasp in the grand scheme of things.
And if you were to evaluate how focused you truly are versus you could be, that was the biggest thing for me, right? Was the fact that I was like, yeah, I wasn't partying, I wasn't going out. That doesn't mean that I was just super focused all the time.
Right.
I was like chilling in the gym, chilling in the sauna, chilling in the pool, right? And then I realized like, wait, an
I'm
hour extra.
Actually doing work.
Yeah, it's an hour extra a day. Fair enough, I'm like relaxing, but I actually could have been working on something that was meaningful. On that point. So what type of, how do you approach like focus and keeping that sharp intent?
So I was growing up, I was the girl that at school would just have a notebook, a notepad, and then just scrap around it, like just put it in her bag. Like I wouldn't actually take notes. I would just be like rasp it around, put it in like scrunch it up and like put it back. I'm the most unorganized person you'll ever meet. So like entrepreneurship has been a ride for me. So when it came to this year and like me setting up the goals, one of my new mentors, Leon, he made me audit my time. And that was the single most traumatizing experience of my entrepreneurship journey, because it was like every 30 minutes I had to time like to say what I was doing. For the whole 24 hours, like 17 of them were just me staring at a fucking wall. Like I wasn't doing anything and I thought I was being productive, but I was just being unproductive. Like I was doing things that I thought were productive, but they weren't. So that's how I kind of like, I audited my time. Then I learned, okay, I'm not doing anything. How can I create sort of like this change, like this habit loop for me to start incorporating positive things into my schedule? So then I started time blocking, okay, from 9 a.m. till 12 p.m. I'm going to do deep work. And then from 12 till 2, I'm going to go for a run or like in lunch. And then again and again, and constantly like repeating that. And having that on my calendar every single day made such a big difference this year.
Did you ever find yourself deviating off that?
Yeah.
Because that's my one of my own problems with doing that for myself. Matt Gray, who I'm interviewing this week, walked me through that too. He was like, oh, he was like, basically he has from 5 a.m. to like 9 p.m. And he has like brushing teeth, like literally that detailed.
Mm-hmm.
And but it's pretty flexible. Like his is like kind of chill, right? It's like he goes for a run, he chills at the beach, stuff like this. But I just feel like that sometimes I could get like super ADD. It's kind of like when you're counting your macros, right?
Right.
Like I have a coach and we have a set meal plan now, which is chill. But before when I had to do it myself, I'm like fucking scanning in super value. And I'm like, I'm doing this because you just get way,
you're obsessed.
You spend more time on the system versus actually just working. Does that make sense?
So you know how you start tracking your macros and then you become like sort of intuitive trackers because you've done it for so long at such a high level that now you can do it automatically. You can look at a bowl of oats and you can be like, okay, that's 500 calories with like 34 grams of carbs and 20 fat, right? I think at the start, you need to obsess like crazy and dial it in so good that you just know how to do it in the next 3 months, like by habit. But I think it's essential to obsess in order to understand it well and then apply it every day without super like focusing on it. So that's what I did for the first month, like January. I literally had it and I followed it like it was like my life depended on it. And otherwise I was going to die. Like if I didn't do it, like I was going to, you know, have a panic attack. So I did it. And now I feel a lot better about how I structure my days because I've created this habit of positive reaffirmation. Okay, if you work from this time till this time, you'll feel good. And if you run from 2 till 3, you'll feel even better and then you'll have more energy. So now I've just created this like lifestyle again that I can live around, yeah.
And you don't do a lot of dumb shit, right? But some stuff.
I mean...
you try your best.
I try my best.
Before we finish up, I want to ask you about AI.
I love AI.
It's going to be interesting, right? How do you think about that right now for your work, your content, and then how do you become like AI proof as well?
I don't think we need to become AI proof. I think we just have to understand how to use AI as a tool. And I was actually so against AI at the start because I was a uni student and ChatGPT was out and like plagiarism like is a no-go at university. So I tried to stay away from it. But the moment I stopped uni, I got into ChatGPT, Bing AI, and every single day I use AI for my writing. I don't use it to actually write my content, but I use it as a tool, like an assistant. But AI will never replace good copywriters. It would only replace bad ones. Same with content creation. It's only a tool. And I've even, like every day I'll ask ChatGPT stuff, like, can you please finish this post for me? And it won't write it well, but it will help me understand, okay, what's the best way to use it. My favorite ChatGPT prompt is like, I'll put something complicated, like a client transcript inside it. And I'll be like, please explain this to me like I'm 5.
It's a good way to look at it. Of course, like 5th grade level, right?
Yes, and people don't understand it. And then it will like simplify it to the most minute terms that I can literally use that in my content so easily. So I'll be able to get very complicated topics out in a simple manner just using ChatGPT. So that's helped me massively and it's reduced my workload from like 5 hours a day to like 2, for example.
So you're basically using it to simplify complex topics and make it easier, because for me, whenever we look at it, sometimes it's like it can just come back and it's just so dorky, it's just so nerdy and just looks so bad, right? Like you read the copy and it looks just awful and it can give me more headaches than just doing it on my own. But it's obviously how you like move the tool.
It's about how you prompt it.
It's like, you know, we had the first like axe, right? You had the axe, most people didn't know how to use it. Then some guys figured out you could cut rocks with it. Then you could build houses with it. Then you can do everything. So it's like developing that tool ability. Now, how much do you put time into like the prompts and even saving prompts? And is that something that you're kind of thinking about doing?
No, I'm not a prompt nerd. I just go and ask simple questions to get basic answers. If I, the most complicated prompt I have is like, this hook worked really well. Please give me 5 more of this. And I'll be like, okay, then I'll take the hook and be like, I like this hook. Please write this in the tone of Sahil Bloom. And he'll write me like a Twitter thread in the tone of Sahil Bloom.
How would the tool find that reference?
So
this is great.
This is why I love Bing AI. It's on Microsoft Edge.
Bing AI?
Yeah, I love it.
I just think about Bing. The old web browser.
It's Bing AI. It's by Microsoft. If people from Microsoft are watching this, please hit me up. I love you so much. You've changed my life. So I'll pull up. You open the website, and then I'll pull out a Sahil Bloom viral thread, and I'll just pull it out, and it'll identify it. And then the next thing, it's got its AI generator, and I'll be like, this tweet worked really well. Please create 5 new versions of this in the tone of Justin Welsh, for example, and talk about productivity instead of lifestyle. And it'll create the whole entire new thread based on the structure in which Sahil Bloom wrote it. So it'll be like the 3-liner, the like 1, 2, 3 steps, and it'll write the same exact thread, but in a different way with a different tone of voice immediately in like the next 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. So it's helped me, like it's revolutionized the way I run the agency, for example, because I don't use that as it is. I take fragments of it and obviously create a new hook and like rework it a little bit so it suits the client that I'm working for. But it helps so much. It's crazy. I love it. Use it.
That's super interesting. Just be able to use it as like a bridge, because again, the way the coder describes it as is that you're the orchestrator, beginning of a play, right? The guy in the front was moving his hands up. That's how you should be with these tools, is that it doesn't replace what you're doing, but instead you just use it as like a basis to build around.
Yeah. And then especially if you're a content creator and you're trying to educate, like it's going to help you reach a lot more people if you understand how to get the basic knowledge out of it and how to grasp what's already working and then take it, apply it, and then write it down. But also AI is good for that, but it's not good for storytelling. Like it will never replace your story. So
you need to inject your own experience.
You need to inject your own charisma, your own personality, your own humor, how you felt. Like that AI will never, ever, ever replace your story. And then I'm working on one thing. Her name is Lara AI. And it's my friend Jody. She actually came up to me one day and she was like, hey, I've got this new tool where we're taking all of creators' content and putting it into this AI-based platform. And you don't need to do anything. You just feed it your content and your client transcripts and it'll talk at you. And I was like, okay. So it took me about 10 minutes to upload all my LinkedIn content from that, Twitter, et cetera, client transcripts and all the masterclasses I've done. Fed her all my content, kind of like played around with her tone of voice. And today you can have a conversation with her and she'll talk like me.
So you're speaking with like a video?
It's a chat. So it'd be like, hey Lara, I'd be like, hi bestie, how are you? And she'll say my mannerisms like slay or like how's it going? Or like that's shit, like that's trash. Or she roasts content, she'll like rewrite it for you.
Nice.
She'll like advise like I am talking. So it's helped me scale my personal brand a lot because people can reach me 24/7 instead of me having to be on hold. So I have it currently on my community where people just ask her questions. Some of our community members have written viral posts from her already. Just, hey, can you roast this post? And they'll be like, she'll be like, yeah. And then she'll rewrite it. She's like, it needs this. It's missing this. Your story's a bit vague.
Holy shit.
It's crazy, right?
We got to go through that. You got to walk me through that offline.
Yeah, it's cool.
I want to say a massive thank you.
Thank you.
I appreciate your time. I appreciate everything.
Thank you for having me.
I want to have another podcast in a year. We're going to see everything that's happened in the past 12 months.
I'll probably be a completely different person by then.
My hair will be down to here. Thank you so much, though.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.